And it's official. The world will soon have a new country. Southern Sudan's near-unanimous referendum was certified yesterday, meaning independence for this largely Christian region after decades of war with the Arab North. But does the story end there? The factors in Sudan, religious and ethnic tensions, political corruption, faulty borders drawn by colonial powers, have produced independence movements elsewhere in Africa, and now they're watching countries to the north, like Tunisia, not splitting, but throwing off governments. So what happens now, and what effect could all of this have on the map of the continent? Joshua Forrest is the director of the Kerr Institute of African History, Politics, and Culture at La Roche College in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. He's the author of Subnational in Africa, Ethnicity, Alliances, and Politics. Welcome.
Thank you.
And we know this can be a huge topic, but we want to try to just take a look at some aspects of it. So first of all, what does happen now? How do we know there's a new African nation formed?
July 9th is the date that formally the country of Sudan has agreed would be the time to announce independence for South Sudan. And at that point, South Sudan will become an independent new nation, and soon thereafter join the United Nations and become a new country.
A lot of things that they have to work out. Oil,
yes,
for instance, is one.
A lot of the oil deposits are in South Sudan territorially, and Khartoum, meaning the country of Sudan, has a claim on those deposits. The percentages between the two countries will have to be worked out. But there is nonetheless a sense of optimism that with the vote that there will be a sort of overwhelming mandate for Sudan to make good on their implicit promise to resolve these issues.
Well, we understand in a situation like this, the UN obviously plays a part by acknowledging a country. But, you know, new countries can say, you know, we're independent all they want, and usually it doesn't matter unless the nation that it secedes from agrees. But there are some exceptions to that rule, right?
There certainly are. The case of Somaliland is a great example. The Republic of Somaliland has declared itself independent for nearly 20 years now. It's had democratic elections with a multi-party system. It's been remarkably stable compared to Somalia proper. And yet it is still waiting for formal recognition from the United Nations and from the big powers in the world. And until that happens, you know, there's a sense that it's not really a new country.
Well, but you've told us that you think Somaliland has a lot of potential to succeed it, but others say that it's an exception because it is such an oasis of democracy in the middle of Somalia. And there's debates as to whether or not what's happening in Sudan will sort of catch fire across the continent. Jeffrey Gettleman writes in the New York Times that it might set a precedent. Jeremy Clark writes in Reuters that he doesn't think that the continent's leaders are unlikely to say that this is a precedent that should be followed. So what do you think? Do you see places on the continent where what's happening in Sudan might light a fire?
The short answer is it won't be a fire so much as a small movement favoring some exceptional cases toward independence. And that's quite different from a large conflagration of independence movements succeeding. I don't think anyone is quite predicting that. On the other hand, it is the case that Africa's borders are artificially crafted. And they're artificial in the sense that they were not created by the African people, but by outsiders. And there's a certain sense of superficiality to those borders. And so there's potential for more reshaping of nations. Now, that doesn't mean, as I say, it's going to erupt in a large-scale movement, but it will certainly provide motivation and incentive to many more movements to pick up the scale of their intensity. For example, there's a movement in the Casamance region of Senegal. Morocco now claims Western Sahara, but Western Sahara has been fighting for independence first from Spain, now from Morocco for many years. You have also breakaway movements in the Delta region of Nigeria. You have an Anglophone movement in northwest and southwest Cameroon. Now, most of these are certainly not going to quickly result in some sort of new nation-state conflagration.
Well, you know, you've been listing some of the reasons, and we earlier listed several: religious, ethnic tensions, political corruption, and, of course, the borders. Of those, which do you think is the most prominent reason for some of these moves to secede? We tend to think of religion when we think of Sudan because of the Christian-Arab divide, but is that the most prominent reason?
No. More typically, it's a history of territorial identity, and secondly, resource sharing, that there is not adequate resource sharing between the central government or the national government and a peripheral region, such as the Casamance of Senegal. I wanted to press this point about territorial identity because when I look around the world and I see other, you know, independence movements that have resulted in new nation states, there's a independence movement in Belgium. There seems to be a very good prospect that Belgium will divide into two parts. When it's been happening in the European cases, it seems to have much more of an ethnic or linguistic base. So countries such as Serbia, Croatia, Ukraine, Bosnia. Georgia, Bosnia, the Czech Republic, Slovak Republic. But in Africa, it tends to be more inter-ethnic, despite this sort of popular image. The reality is that most secession movements cannot be successful without linking up with lots of different ethnic groups. For movements to be successful, as South Sudan is a good case in point, you have to have, at some point, alliances between ethnic groups. And that's one of the most interesting characteristics of the African separatist movements.
Well, in other parts of the world, there are groups that have wanted independence, and they instead find an uneasy middle ground. Some ethnic minorities are given limited rights, very limited rights, of self-governance in China. And some people might point to Native Americans here in the United States. Do you think that there are options like that available for some of these African groups so that the map isn't necessarily changed?
Yes. In fact, I think that that's what has been happening on the ground for the past couple of decades in Africa. But it's not so much that it's a choice of the separatist movement leaders and of the central government leaders. It's more a de facto reality that the central government may lack the military and economic strength to fully engage with separatist regions or with peripheral areas, provinces. And so you're going to get more of that, more essentially de facto autonomy that, while it does not change the macro map of national borders, it does change how political power is dispersed on the ground.
That's Joshua Forrest, the director of the Kerr Institute of African History, Politics, and Culture at La Roche College in Pittsburgh, with his thoughts on how, as we await the expected split of Sudan, on how that might affect the rest of the continent. Dr. Forrest, thank you.
You're welcome.